I did not like being a middleman. I wanted more control. So I was like, let me take a shot at it. Let me see what this entails. And from there, it was just a learning curve, you know, learning all the insurances and criteria, because we're all here for the patient. We all have the same goal. We're all here for the fight.
Welcome to That's Derm Good. I'm Janelle Ball, and I'm excited to bring you thought-provoking conversations about biologics, specialty medications, treatments, and so much more. I'll be chatting with some amazing guests about access, affordability, and advocacy. You're really going to enjoy this show. Welcome to That's Derm Good. My guest is Alisa Redmond. She is a medical assistant and a biologic and medication access coordinator. So thank you for joining me.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. So Alisa, originally you did not want to be in the medical field. Give me a little background on that. Like, what were your thoughts when you were starting out and how did you get into dermatology?
Yeah. So my first degree was in emergency management. And so I've done a lot of volunteer hours at the county level in Florida where we were living at the time and doing some stuff with the Red Cross, and it was a lot of fun, a little intimidating at times. It's just a really serious line of work. The demand for readiness at all times. You're essentially on call 24/7, and I had just become a mom, and it just didn't fit right into my personal life. You know, in my gut, I just knew that it was just going to be too demanding. So came time to kind of just sit down and decide what my next step was going to be, and decided to pick the medical field.
So was dermatology your first office in the medical field, or did you work in a different specialty?
Started out in family practice, been to two different family practices, and I appreciate that time and kind of starting out that way because it gives you a good framework of, you know, cardiology, diabetes, and, you know, endo, and kind of a few different specialties of what family practice can manage. I will say, of all the specialties, derm was the least that I learned when I was in family practice. So it was a really big jump when I got into dermatology.
What do you love about dermatology?
All the things. It's just gratifying. In dermatology, you can visually see the results. You know, it's not a heart where blood work that shows. You're visually seeing results. You're visually seeing someone get better and what your outcome is.
Yeah, I love that. I feel like that's one of the reasons that drew me into dermatology too. But how did you get into the biologics? So everybody that I talk to, they're like, oh, I just got thrown into it, or I just got handed it. So I want to know how you got into biologics and the prior authorization and becoming an expert in that area.
Basically that. So I don't think anybody kind of like is excited and chooses to do that because they don't really know what you're getting into until you do it. So in our practice, we have clinical coordinators. They're over the MAs and they're in charge of all basically the clinical admin stuff, and the PAs and biologics was a part of that. So I'm in my first year of being at the practice, and I was just like, hey, you know, I've done cover my meds. You know, I haven't done dermatology medications yet, but you know, if you need some help, you know, it'll help me learn the medications. And started out being, you know, on to-do days where the MAs don't have clinic and we kind of do other things around, and it just went from there. They were happy to hand that over.
I'm sure they were. There's so many different pieces that go into being a biologic coordinator, and it's not just doing the prior authorizations. Who were the people that really kind of helped you throughout that process?
So one of the clinical coordinators, she was doing majority of the biologics, the general derm medications, topicals and stuff. I was kind of figuring out on my own because I was learning how, you know, what they were for and everything in being in clinic, you know, in the rooms with the patients. And I was just listening on repeat, you know, the doctors talking about it and prescribing it. So the one coordinator that was taking the majority of the responsibility before it came to me, she was, you know, the one kind of helping me. And then at the time, because it was just so overwhelming, they were sending everything to specialty pharmacy, mainly to do PAs and kind of take over everything. So everything was going to specialty pharmacy. And when I took over, I didn't like not knowing what was going on with the patient's case. So they're going to call me. They're not going to call the specialty pharmacy we sent everything to. They don't know that exists. So the patient would call me, I would hate saying, I don't really know. Let me check on that. And then making a call, maybe I get someone, maybe I don't. And then kind of just being the middleman. I did not like being the middleman. I wanted more control. So I was like, let me try. Let me take a shot at it. Let me see what this entails. And from there, it was just a learning curve, learning every single day, learning all the insurances and criteria, and just it was you never stop learning. And it just kind of went from there.
Absolutely. And even for me, just doing this for so long, there's always new things to learn. So I can't ever say that I know everything there is to know about being a biologic coordinator because I don't. And that's where it's so exciting for me to be able to connect with other people that are doing the same thing as me and to say, hey, what are your best practices? And it just makes us become better because we're collaborating, we're able to learn from each other and see what works. So that kind of brings us into kind of a new segment that I wanted to do. It's called Issue in the Fix. So, want to find out what is one of the big hurdles that you have, whether it's specialty medications, the biologics.
Yeah, so we already know the struggle with specialty pharmacies, especially certain ones, but just the processing time, wishing it was just as easy as, we'll send it and they just pick it up, or it just gets delivered. And honestly, that's the hardest thing to explain to the patients when we initiate them on one is, explaining to them the time it's going to take when they're suffering and they've been suffering and all these things haven't worked and they're expecting to get something, and it's not that simple. So really, insurances and the criteria that they have decided to put in place for these medications. And sometimes it's all about the reviewer, and different reviewers give different answers. And I've learned that here recently is sometimes it just depends on the reviewer you get. But especially with the new year, people are switching insurances. And I have a few patients who are established, they're doing well, they're well controlled, and their new insurance is like, yeah, we don't cover specialty medications. So that's been, a really big challenge. And I know one that has kind of started grandfathering them in, and I'm hoping that is going to start picking up because it's just not right for the patient. It just doesn't make sense. They're established, they're well controlled. Why are we going to interrupt that and risk them staying at their best and, having them go back to what they were before they got on this treatment?
Right. What would be the fix for that? Whether it's insurance reform, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, insurance reform sounds nice. Grandfathering definitely just needs to be a given. It just does not make sense to take a patient off something that's working for them, simply because they just don't want to pay for it. The costs of the biologics and the companies, filling their pockets and having all these different hands in the pot while patients are suffering, and it's just everyone should be able to get access to what their prescriber thinks they should be on, since they're the ones seeing them.
Right. What is one of the most stressful things in your role when it comes to access?
So the first thing that popped up in my head is Accutane, which isn't even a biologic, but there's, that's a whole federal mandated thing. But yeah, it's just the red tape that is put around providers as far as what they deem to be medically necessary and appropriate for their patient. They're being told, well, no, but have they tried a TCI? If they failed a topical steroid, what is a TCI really going to do? And the provider seeing the severity, the provider seeing the patient physically in office, who is someone behind the scenes and probably a totally different state behind a computer to determine and, tell that provider, no, we don't agree.
Yeah, it's frustrating, especially, we're the ones that are working hard to really try to get the medication that the provider actually prescribes. And when there's so many barriers behind that, it makes it difficult. And that perception of what is actually available for the patients, it's not there. They feel like, oh, well, I can't get this medication because the insurance has told me no.
I have one now. I got a denial letter for an appeal, and it was like nothing I've ever read. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not letting this one go.
I think that's what makes the biologic coordinator so unique because every time I talk to other coordinators, they're like, I love the fight. Secretly, we hate it, but we actually also enjoy, you know, fighting with the insurance and, you know, finding creative ways to say, you know what, this is why the patient actually needs this medication. And I'm going to pull out all the stops and I'm going to make sure that I'm able to rightfully get my patient their medication that they actually really need. And part of that is really showing the insurance, you know, a lot of it is in the documentation, and how we write those appeal letters makes such a huge difference. You know, you've got a different person that's reviewing those prior authorization forms and they're checking boxes. They don't look at the patient. They don't know the patient. They don't see what they're going through on a daily basis and how stressful a chronic condition is on their life and how it affects their family and, you know, relationships. And it's so important for us to really relay that and paint that picture to the insurance companies so that they can understand, like, oh, yes, okay, they actually do need this medication. And it's sad that we have to do that much work, you know.
Yeah, it's very impersonal on their end. And I think that's where part of the fight comes from, is we take it personally, you know, because we feel responsible for that patient now. You know, the provider has a responsibility and we have a responsibility. And it's just so impersonal for, you know, like you said, someone over there never met the patient, and we can put it in black and white all day long. And sometimes they don't even really read thoroughly. And, you know, they'll deny for something that really was in the documentation. Then it just extends the process, and it's, you know, just more days and more weeks for the patient to not be treated.
Right. Absolutely. So if you had a magic wand and could change anything about the biologic process or just specialty medications, what would you change?
Just get rid of the criteria. Get rid of reviewers. Get rid of the criteria. There's no need for it. You know, it sounds extreme, but honestly, you know, the treating prescriber is equally qualified as reviewers. You know, the people and entities who make up these criteria and are getting paid to save the insurance company money, the treating physicians know standard of care. They know when it's appropriate to start a biologic and when it's not. They're the ones treating the patient. Insurance doesn't need to play doctor. I say that all the time. They're just trying to play doctor. You know, the patient already has one, and criteria really just has nothing to do with the best interest of the patient.
Right. I completely agree. So you told me that you work with all of the medications and not just the biologics. What else are you doing in the office?
Yeah, just, you know, refills. Any call about a medication comes to me. So, you know, the daily, at least one a day, something happened with Accutane and we got to fix it. We're working right now trying to figure out an issue for that, because it's just so tightly mandated, and rightfully so, you know, because of what can happen on that medication. But tretinoin is a retinoid. It's most common for acne, and that needs a PA regardless. If we prescribe tretinoin, it needs a PA. Simply to tell the insurance it's not for cosmetic purposes, it's for acne. So, you know, it gets a little monotonous, but, you know, those are easy enough. Okay, we'll do it, you know. And then just what insurance decides to pay and not pay for, they'll cover cream. They don't want gel. We want a tablet. We don't want a capsule. You know, it's just.
Right. So you see a lot of the same issues with the specialty medications as you do with just regular topicals and orals?
Yeah. So, you know, some of the new topical JAK inhibitors, you know, a lot of the criteria is either, you know, a TCI like Protopic or Elidel. They have to have tried one of those. I think some of them is both, like one or the other. Elidel, maybe one plan that I can think of. Most of the time you have to have tried Protopic to try to get Elidel, but you still, by default, just like tretinoin, need a PA for Protopic, just so we can say it's for the FDA indicated indication.
Yeah. So there's so much that goes into all of that, but what makes it easier when it comes to having to write those medications, those step therapies, what do you find is the easiest, or what are some of the challenges within the rest of your staff? Because you're the one who has to do that prior authorization. So how do you get everybody else on the same page?
Yeah, so we really do have a great staff, and I know they get sick of my emails, because I'll just like, hey, here's your friendly reminder, you know, document, but have you documented it? That's my thing. is it documented? You know, we need the history of the patient, and just, you know, even in sometimes insurance companies, they want it on paper. They want a claim. They want it in our notes that we prescribe, you know, the medication we're saying they took. Some, it depends on the reviewer again, some reviewers will take the patient's word for it that, hey, patient reported she's already tried this. And some reviewers are like, no, we need to see a claim or we need to see it in documentation. But really that aspect is really all about documentation, and it can get frustrating if it's not there. But again, you know, amending is pretty easy. Just pop this in there. You know, a lot of the times when the new criteria for the atopic dermatitis was coming out, and they were like, you know, it used to be BSA across the board was fine. Now they have to have an EASI score. And my providers are like, we didn't have to used to do this. So the providers are having to remember as well. And I'm like, just put both of them in there. Just put a BSA, just put an EASI, you know, and I just have to be sure about, you know, reading over the note before I send it. Because it's faster to, you know, say, hey, can you amend this real quick? Just pop that in there, because you end up learning what pharmacy benefit wants what at a certain point. So when you get denials enough, or you get enough consistent PAs, it kind of just sticks, and you know it needs to be in there. And it's much easier to just amend something real quick if they forgot or it just didn't make its way in there than just to send everything, not reviewing it, and then it coming back and denying, and then you got an appeal, and that's going to take a lot longer. So
yeah, because there's so much back and forth that happens when stuff is not done properly the first time. I was at a conference not too long ago and was talking with a provider, and I was like, he was asking what I was going to be talking about at the conference, and I was like, oh yeah, I have a talk about documentation best practices. And he was like, yeah, well, you know, just do it right the first time and you won't have any issues. It's like easier than done. You know what? If everybody was able to follow that, then that would be great. It would make my life so much easier.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's hard, but you know, you still need those general reminders to your office team, because, you know, number one, you do get now, there's so much turnover in offices that people that are coming in, they don't know. And so as soon as you get somebody in that doesn't know how to properly document, then it just slows the process down. And then your patients are delayed and they're not getting access to the medication that they really need, or you have to do all these other, you know, step edits or change therapies, and, you know, because things are not properly documented.
Yeah. And in a busy office, a busy practice like ours, you know, I really do try to give them grace, because I've been there. You know, I was an MA for a year and a half, so I definitely get it, especially when you're learning and you're new. And, you know, we have more psoriasis, you know, our biologic patients are picking up. And in the beginning, it was kind of not few and far between, but, you know, more than that, but you don't do them as often. You're not constant, like a full body note is like second nature, you know. Doing a biologic note or an Accutane note, you know, those are things that don't come as easily. And there's so much involved. Dermatology is a lot, you know, and there's so many things you're already worrying about. RMAs, you know, we do a lot, and it goes to show how well our office runs and how great our patients are, and, you know, our reviews that we get and everything. You know, we're very supportive of the providers, you know, and it's a team effort. And so, you know, I'll only send out those intramails if it's like, you know, twice a week, if it's, you know, if it's getting to be, you know, to a certain point. But yeah, training is definitely difficult, because you can only train what you're getting in the office. You know, you can train on a test patient all day, but it's really not going to click unless you're doing it more often. So
yeah, absolutely. So where do you go to stay up to date, and where do you continue your education when it comes to access?
When I was given the role as biologic coordinator, I thought we just made it up. I didn't think it was a thing, you know? And so I knew prior authorization specialist was a thing, but the biologic coordinator, I had no idea about this whole world there is. So I have really good field service reps that I've made really good relationships with, and I have them on speed dial, and I'm texting, you know, one of them almost daily, and they're great. You're never bothering them, and they're more than happy to help. And even if it's something that they don't particularly deal with, they'll either push it up to somebody or they'll get you to the right person. And the biggest thing for me has been LinkedIn. I went to my first talk. I went to a dinner for Dupixent, and the speaker was amazing. And I was just like, it really got me fueled up to be like, man, I'm really taking this role seriously. This is, you know, what I want to do, and make it mine and make it successful. And, you know, just kind of reactivated my LinkedIn, and it's just opened me up to a whole new world. And I've been, you know, I found you on there, and, you know, a couple other people, and, you know, I've reached out once or twice, you know, just to kind of be like, hey, this is totally new for us. I've never done this before. And, you know, just want to make sure this is right and what I can do. And it's just been, it's an amazing community. I mean, no one's bothered, and everyone is, you know, happy to help and make it work, because we're all here for the patient. We all have the same goal. We're all here for the fight.
Yes, I love that. I feel like when I talk to other coordinators, you get so excited. Like you said, when you were to that dinner program and you heard the coordinator, it helps to motivate us, and it helps to get us excited to know that, okay, even though we're dealing with the frustrations and the denials and the delays and, you know, sitting on hold for endless hours at a time, there's something exciting about knowing that other people are dealing with the same thing.
Yeah.
And they've got, you know, different little pearls and tips that we can learn from each other and help motivate each other to be able to figure out the best way to get access for our patients, to make sure that they're able to get on the medication that they've been prescribed by their doctor, because we know that it's going to change their life, you know, and it makes such a huge difference. And it's so gratifying for us that are working on those prior authorizations, but it's really exciting.
Absolutely. Gratifying is the perfect word. I've been so gratified. It's just been so gratifying and fulfilling, especially when, you know, and some of these patients, you know, you build relationships with them. They know you by name, and they call and talk to you, and you, you know, you kind of just talk and ask how, you know, you get a little personal on certain levels. And there is nothing like a patient, you know, telling you you changed their life. And it just makes every denial, every hour and a half long hold with the pharmacy, all of those fights are worth it just for that one. So yeah, you definitely get fulfillment out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So ending on a high note, what brings you the most joy about working in the derm office? And is there any other ways that we can get others to embrace that and just to encourage other people that are maybe doing the same thing that we are?
Yeah. So, and I fell in love with dermatology. It's a lot to learn. It can be hard, but then you physically see the results. You know, if it's a cancer and it's a Mohs case, we can see the cancer is gone before the patient leaves. You know, we know they're going home and there is no cancer left. And, you know, in my practice, we get to see how good our Mohs surgeon is. but, you know, and, outcome is so important. You know, cancer's scary no matter what kind of cancer it is. And if we can just give the patient the most aesthetically pleasing outcome possible, in addition to being cancer-free, you know, we can free them from that daily reminder when they look in the mirror. And then, you know, from our biologic patients to hair loss, you know, when the patients are able to get on the appropriate treatment and you see them after however long they've been on it, you know, some takes longer than others, some are immediate. And you can just see physically their skin is clear, their hair is growing back, but also they just look like a totally different person the next time you see them. They feel better. They're not struggling to do their daily activities. They feel better about themselves. They can sleep better. They can get out of bed not having to wash their bloody sheets from itching all night, you know? And it's the visual gratification, but, you know, more so, again, there's just nothing like a patient telling you that, you know, you changed their life and they just feel so much better. And that impact on them puts just as much of an impact on you. And just putting yourself in the patient's shoes, or just thinking about how it would feel to watch your loved one go through these things and, you know, just go to work and, you know, why wouldn't you want to give it your best effort, you know? But if you are the patient, you would want to receive someone else's best effort, no matter whether you're already established in your career or somewhere for the time being to get some bills paid, you're in between something, you know, you can't limit yourself to the black and white of your job duties and expect to get more out of it than what you're putting into it. So you're the cause, the effect will follow.
I love that. That is perfectly well said. Thank you so much, Elisa, for joining me and for just chatting about your experience. And I think that other listeners would absolutely enjoy hearing this conversation because it just brings so much joy to me to talk about what we do on a regular basis and how we're changing lives and helping improve lives. But I really appreciate your time and thank you so much for joining me.
Oh yeah, I'll be reaching out to you at some point probably for something that, you know, I haven't come across yet.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for spending a few minutes with me and listening to That's Derm Good. You can expect new episodes of That's Derm Good every week. The podcast is available on your favorite app, including where you're listening right now. Subscribe to the podcast so you never miss a new episode. Bye.